And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom, you're listening to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network. That's thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with my best buddy, Jeremy Gimpel. Today was an emotionally devastating day, demanding, heart-wrenching, difficult. We were in the Jewish city of Amona in Samaria, which is slated to be destroyed soon. Jeremy, how was that for you?
It was very hard. You know, the more you love something, there's a risk there. And I love the land of Israel, and I love the Jewish people. I love the settlers of Judea and Samaria, and seeing their whole lives about to be erased after putting so many years invested in that land, invested in that community, and to just see the community being wiped off the map for almost no reason at all is really painful.
It really is painful. And just the look in the eyes of the children there, and also not knowing, you know, according to the Supreme Court, it needs to be destroyed by December 25th, but they could do it at any time up until then, not giving the families any notice. And, you know, this has happened before. This happened in Gaza. This also happened in Amona 11 years ago. I was there for that. I experienced it. It was a trauma that I hope I'm going to be able to share on this program in just a little bit. But this seems different. The degree of injustice in this, because I imagine people around the world, especially listening to our program, must be thinking, like, what is wrong with you Jews? God has returned you to your homeland in this miraculous fashion, and now you're destroying the homes of these brave pioneers and giving it to your enemies, whose stated explicit goal is the destruction of your nation. Are you nuts? You know, and it's a valid question, but the truth is that it's important to understand that what's happening in Amona is not a reflection of the nation of Israel. It's not a reflection of the Jewish people. Why? Because it's the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court. I want us to talk about the Supreme Court thing for a little bit, because it's important to understand it's different than it is in America. There's some tie in to the democratic process where it is Congress affirms it and the president selects it. These are all democratically elected officials that somehow the Supreme Court is in some way a democratic representation of the way it is of the nation. It's not that way in Israel. It's a self-perpetuating gang of lawyers that vote each other in. There's 9 different votes to determine who it is, and 5 of the 9 votes are the Supreme Court themselves and other lawyers who are not in any way elected by the people. Okay, so they're doing these totally insane, backwards, unjust. So what happened here? There's this nonprofit organization, Yesh Din. That's what it's called. Yesh Din, funded primarily by foreign governments. And they sought after Arabs. They did their investigation and their research, and they found Arabs and they sat down with them and convinced them that they have some sort of stake of ownership. People around the world are picturing these indigenous Arabs coming and saying, this is my father's and father's father's land, and it's our hair. They didn't even know. It wasn't even their thing. This nonprofit funded by foreign governments to destroy the state of Israel went and they found an Arab that made a claim on half an acre of the 60 acres of what Amona is. Half an acre. And the Supreme Court ruled the entire place needs to be destroyed. Can you imagine such a thing? It's so illogical.
You know, it's not just illogical, it's evil. You know, it's this dehumanization of the settlers, where if we want to pass laws to make illegal building for Bedouin in the Negev, we'll do that. If we want illegal building for Arabs in Jerusalem, we'll pass that. But somehow this sort of questionable, but not even that questionable thing, if it's settlers, it's dehumanizing them. There are 200 children that live in Amona, and they're going to be homeless. They're going to have to realize that the government is destroying their home. It's human beings. These are people's lives. These are people's homes. This is a community that's been built, friendships that will be broken and torn apart. It's just taking the soul of these people and just squashing it as if they're some sort of commodity that can be traded and moved like cattle.
It's such arrogance It's such immorality. The prime minister himself requested a delay for a few months, but the Supreme Court summarily rejected it, of course. Why? Because they're not justices. They're political activists whose mission it is to prove that they're more powerful than the government. There's this real battle of, and it seems like there's a lot of ambiguity as to who really is stronger, who has the final say. Is it the Supreme Court? Is it the Prime Minister and the Knesset? What is it? I'll tell you that if I were the guy totally in charge here, I would make it a referendum. If you want to be in the, because if the Prime Minister were to change anything, the country would be in, up in arms in the Supreme Court. Let the nation have a direct referendum to vote on who are the justices in the Supreme Court. That's what needs to happen. Why? Because every time there's a referendum and the nation votes, more and more and more we're voting in right-wing leaders. They're not doing right-wing things, but they are right-wing leaders. But anyways, so it's so unjust, and what you just said is exactly right on about the settlers and dehumanizing them. I remember Gaza, and I remember being there for, what was I there, 2 weeks, Jeremy, beforehand?
Yeah.
I was there for a while beforehand, and seeing the army come and pick up, carry away this, burned in my mind, this woman that's watering her lawn. Well, she's watering her lawn, and the soldiers are carrying her away as she has her hose watering her lawn as she's being transferred out of her home. The devastation of the people there, the children, the people were being thrown from place to place. They were promised all sorts of things that they never received. And then 6 months after the trauma of Gaza, where I was like, wow, Gaza, that was really traumatic. I didn't know what trauma was. I did not know what trauma was. Why? Because Gaza, there were tears and there was pain, but there was very little, if any, violence that happened between the Israelis and the Israeli army. But then in Amona, because this happened 11 years ago, nearly exactly 11 years ago when I was down there. And I thought it was going to be a similar type of thing to what happened in Gaza. But the police came in with children were holding hands, singing peaceful, passive resistance. And they were cracking kids' heads open with these bayonets. You can see the videos of it. You don't need to take my word for it. There are videos you can see where they're actually just beating these kids' heads open. It was direct orders from Ehud Olmert, who's in prison right now, and he deserves to be in prison as far as I'm concerned for the rest of his life. But I don't know how this is going to play out in Amona this time. They're saying that they're going to try to do it earlier. That, yes, by December 25th, it's said that they're going to destroy it and demolish all the homes, but they're going to, I imagine, do it before that date and close off all of the roads so none of the protesters can come, and they're just going to force their will on a nation that doesn't want to see such a thing happen.
I mean, imagine what the people of Amona are going through right now. There's already rumors that are going around Amona saying that maybe they might be coming Saturday night and just evict them in the middle of the night in the freezing cold. They don't have time to pack their things even. It's just they don't know what they're like in such limbo. It's such mental torment that the government is putting these real heroes through. The government sent them to go live in Amona. The government set up infrastructure in Amona, telephone lines and roads and electricity. And these people said that Israel needs us there. We will go there. We'll put our lives on the line in a risky area. We want to settle the land. We love the land. And now to take the cream of the crop of our people and to just stomp all over them is so unjust.
Yeah, you know what it was like? I remember, Jeremy, I was down in Gaza, and it was like an oasis. You know, we went down there. It was arid desert. There was nothing there. And we went down just like the prophet Yeshayahu Isaiah said, the desert blossomed like a rose. And the children are running and going to the beach. You went to yeshiva there, right?
I sure did.
And you would surf there.
Beautiful beaches, most beautiful beaches in Israel.
The most beautiful beaches in Israel. And then these families were ripped out of their homes in the most violent, jarring ways possible. And let's just simplify the issue here. This is a battle for our very existence. This isn't just about Amona. If we don't have a right to Amona, then we don't have a right to Tel Aviv. And, you know, if we're going to be a nation of law and someone does come and say, OK, well, this is my ancestral land, that's a whole nother discussion on what we should do with that. But at the most, we should offer them compensation. You know, I just interviewed, we're actually, I'm not going to say because I'm going to insert the interview I did with Anita Tucker and let her say the story for herself. But any nation, America even, they have laws that eminent domain, the government can take away private land of people, compensate them for it, in order to build private projects in America. And to have half of an acre of land be contested and destroy the entire city, the lack of logic is so arrogant and so blood-curdlingly infuriating.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not illogical. It is a spiritual war that is being waged on Israel right now. And this may be confusing for our listeners because they're like, wait a minute, but the Obama administration is going out and the European Union hasn't put out a decree. Why is Israel destroying itself? And this is what we need to understand, that inside Israel, there is a battle for Israel's identity as well. And the founding fathers of Israel established a system where the Supreme Court, which is like the upper echelons of Israeli society, the intellectuals, the lawyers, they are there, and they've been there since the founding of the state. And the founding of the state was Mapai, left, communist, secular Zionists, and they've maintained their power, and they've elected themselves, and they've re-elected themselves, and they've stayed there. And that, although the nation of Israel is transforming its heart, and although the nation of Israel is becoming more spiritual, more religious, more conservative, more traditional, more connected to biblical values, the Supreme Court has maybe even become more left-wing and more secular, ideologically secular, ideologically left. This is an ideological left-wing attack on the settler movement.
They're holding on to their power for dear life. For dear life, they see it slipping through their fingers. They see the demographics changing, and this is the final. I feel like it's death throes.
Yeah, this is what I feel like. It's like there's a few more bullets left in the chamber, and these are their firing rounds as they're finally slowly losing their power here in the land of Israel, and they're trying to take as much down as they can with them. And why is there this attack on the settlements? Why is there an attack on people that are living in Amona? And this is what the people need to understand. What is Judea and Samaria? What are these places? Why are Ari and I and Ishai and Josh and Eve and Shlomo Katz and all of our network, why are we so committed to the people of Judea and Samaria? Now, this is so important, and I've said this in the past to so many groups, but take the most religious state in the United States. Let's say it's Texas. And you take the most religious city in the state. Let's say, I don't know, that somewhere in Austin or Amarillo, or
Austin.
I don't know what. Not Austin. It doesn't matter.
That's
where.
The least religious.
The littlest town with the most churches per capita on street corners, whatever that town is, the most religious town.
Let's say Amarillo.
In the entire United States.
Okay.
There is no town in all of America that the entire town is dedicated to God. There's no such thing. But the settlements of Judea and Samaria.
Point taken. Just when you say there's no such thing.
There's no such thing. There's
how do you say that?
There is no such town.
Okay, I don't want to get lost. It's just a very sweeping blanket statement that I just don't know.
Okay, because America is just a country that isn't for. You would have to form a settlement where it's like people are coming together for this purpose
to be
religious.
There's entire Amish cities that are like committed to their faith.
That's not a town. That's an Amish little style. This is a village.
All right,
a
go
town.
Ahead.
That the entire town is dedicated to God. The entire community is living by the Torah. A Shabbat in the settlements, the entire city shuts down. There's no cell phones. There's no cars. It's a spiritual oasis in the middle of Israel. And isn't it interesting that it's specifically in that area, in the West Bank, in Judea and Samaria, that's what's under attack. Because what we are under attack, we are under spiritual warfare right now. The settlements are godly communities, the godliest communities perhaps in all of Israel. And it's those that are being targeted. It's those that are being hated. It's those that are being attacked. And there's no other way around it. You know, I always ask this question, but I want you to talk first.
No, go ahead.
Well, why is everyone, the world, so obsessed with this land? I mean, there's European foreign governments are funding this organization in order to find the Arabs, in order to make a petition to the court. Why are these European governments so obsessed with the land of Israel? And I look back just a little bit in
just
history.
So you know, a European Union envoy, the spokesman, he said he was urging the Knesset to vote against the bill that would prevent this from happening in the future.
Of course.
He's actually getting involved and telling Knesset members what to do.
And so the question needs to be asked. And I want you to know, I believe that many of these corrupt members of Knesset may be being paid off. That happened in Oslo, where people were being bribed to vote one way or the other. And we don't know what money is going where and from what foreign governments it's coming from. But why are these European countries so obsessed with Israel? And I just take a little step back, and with the power of Jewish memory and our history, for thousands of years, the world raped and pillaged and then abandoned this land. They cut down all of our trees. They killed most of our animals. And they left this land in sackcloth and ashes for thousands of years. No one cared about the land of Israel. No one loved this land. And now we've returned.
Yeah, they cared about it. They didn't love it.
No, I don't think they even cared about it.
No, they wanted to control it. It's a thoroughfare between three continents.
It's
an important place. They fought over it, but they didn't love it.
When Mark Twain arrived in the land of Israel, and this isn't that long ago, it's a little bit more than 100 years ago, there was nothing here.
That's not because they didn't try. It's because the land wouldn't respond to them.
Okay. I think that if you look at like legal documents and histories, there just wasn't a presence here. It was just abandoned. Okay. It was just left. It was left to rot. Because no one loved it. No one cared for it. And then the Jewish people returned to the land and then spent more than a century planting trees, reviving the land, turning this place into an oasis like Amona. And then what do we see? Just days ago, jihadis came and torched all of our forests and in seconds burned it all down. And now other people that the European, yes, just destroy this entire village and wipe it off the map. And who does this land belong to? And who belongs to this land? Once the Jewish people get clear on those two questions and we come to the realization that this is our land, it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says. It doesn't matter what the European Union says. This is our land. Those Arabs should be compensated for their land. They can get paid money. Those communities need not only to stay, they need to be built up. They need to be strengthened. And we just need to reclaim what is truly ours. It's a battle for Israel's identity. The only hope that I see in the future is that the Supreme Court is slowly but surely losing its power, and the left secular postmodern world that's so alienated from all context and all history is slowly losing its power, and the Jewish people are rising up.
Yeah, they're not going to go down without a fight, though. The Supreme Court is not going to go down without a fight. The left in this country is not going to go down without a fight. And you're right. Until we have it clear whose land this is, this will continue on in this fashion. And it's unfortunate because due to the Supreme Court, which is not a reflection or a representation of the nation of Israel, we are exuding the opposite, the antithesis of what we should. We are the mother who says, cut the baby. Where the mother says, yeah, go ahead, slice the baby in half. Yeah, take this and take that and take this. Is it our land? Would you say that about your wife? Take a night with my wife? It's so crazy. It's so painful. And you know, what do they call? You were talking about, Jeremy, about dehumanizing the settlers. They call them mitnachlim. Okay, now I don't think Israelis really are conscious of what that really means. But mitnachlim comes from the word nachala, which means heritage. And a heritage, I've said this before, is different than an inheritance. An inheritance is something that you can give away if you want to. A heritage is part of who we are. When we realize that this is not even our land to give away, this is God's land, and he's entrusted it with us. It's not our land to give away, and giving it away is a reflection of nothing more than we are putting our fears and our consciousness in Ma Yomru HaGoyim, and what will the nations of the world say? Will they like us? Will they love us? That's what it really comes down to, and that's what it's about. And this community of Amona people are saying it's 20 years old. It's not. It's from chapter 18 in the book of Joshua. Where that's where the city was first established, and it was just revived 20 years ago. But that's the argument. That's where the roots are, from the times of Joshua. So the only argument the world will respect is when we say this is a village established in the times of Joshua, and this book, the Tanakh, the Bible, the Word of God, this is our right to this land. That's what the whole thing is about. And that's what you said, Jeremy, about the people here, the people in Amona. So holy. they've gone through so much, and their resilience and their positivity is really inspiring. And our listeners out there know we've had on Mordechai Zeller, one of our dearest friends, both of us, one of our dearest friends, and someone I consider my rabbi and just such a soul. His sister lives in Amona. 11 years ago, I was there with her in her home as Amona was being destroyed then. And now we're back. It was like deja vu. I'm seeing her again. And I want you to listen to the discussion we had with Manya and really listen to what she has to say.
And I think it's important for people to listen to just a mother of six that's living in a home that's about to be destroyed. She has no control over her future. She doesn't know where she's going to go. They have some sort of place that's sort of maybe there, and they have to live there for only 8 months. And then after 8 months, they have to be evacuated again to some other place that's unclear. And what the human side, what's happening inside the homes of the Jewish people of Amona? And even if you're listening to this and you're on the other side of the world, whether it be in Australia or Teaneck or LA, know that there are Jewish people that are in real pain now. And it's our responsibility to pray for them, to think about them, and to support them. And so here's a short clip from Manya Hillel inside a home in Amona that we were at today.
Here we are with Manya Hillel. She is a resident of Amona, which is slated to be demolished in just a couple weeks from now. Manya, thank you so much for joining us on the show and bringing us into your beautiful home. You know, when we were preparing for this interview, you called me up right afterward and said, "All right, I feel like this is deja vu. We've been here before."
Yeah.
And it's true. It was deja vu. It was 11 years ago.
Almost 11 years ago, yeah.
11 years ago, almost exactly, that Amona was destroyed the last time around. And how long have you been here?
We have been here for 14 and a half years. Last time, Amona wasn't destroyed, which was... For the past 10 years, people have been asking us, well, where do you live? And I'm like, oh, wasn't Amona destroyed? I'm like, no, Amona was not destroyed. There were nine permanent homes that were built here. They were destroyed, which is the reason that people here expanded with light construction and not with permanent homes, because that's what we were able to do. But yeah, we designed our own home, and it's light construction, but it's a home.
So what happened to those nine homes 11 years ago is now slated to happen to you?
The difference is that at the time, they demolished nine homes, and the rest of the settlement stayed here, so we all moved back into our caravans that we lived in before and expanded them. But the community still existed. We still had our neighbors. We still had our community, our kindergarten, our synagogue, our outdoor, everything, agriculture. Everything was the same. Just these nine houses that we were hoping would be a new neighborhood in Amona were destroyed. Now it's a different story. Now they want to destroy the whole yeshuv, the whole community. Which is a lot harder to deal with.
They want to destroy the entire community.
Yeah.
And it's infuriating, it's painful. How was it different for you 11 years ago than it is right now?
At the time, I felt like it was just trying to prove a political point that Olmert was trying to prove at the time and be elected, to show that he would do the same as Sharon had done, and he would go even if it was going against settlers and evacuating something. He said it was going to be done with whatever it took, and it was an awful experience. I'm sure you remember that too.
Sure, I remember. It was right after Gaza, the disengagement, half a year after, and I was there for that, and it was a very different experience. I was, you know, picked up and carried out. There was very, very little violence in Gaza, and in Amona, there was tremendous violence. I mean, it was a trauma for me personally. It was a trauma for the nation.
I imagine
it was
a
trauma for you and this community.
More on the... I feel less that it was a personal trauma. I feel more that it was a general trauma.
Communal, national.
National, yeah. I don't know. Something in my heart broke on that day, seeing the hatred and seeing the violence that was pointed towards people, towards Jewish people, towards young people. It was horrendous. It was awful.
What does it feel like now for you? And now that you have a home that's built on a solid foundation, that you've raised your children here, and this is slated to be demolished, how are you feeling right now?
Sad. Also kind of humiliated. I feel like there's so much corruption going on here. I feel that this is being done, and people are saying, oh, this is... There's nothing to do, Malasso, this is the Supreme Court, they just ruled against this and whatever, but it's so wrong, it's just, everything here is totally corrupt. The Supreme Court is working from a place of total corruption. There's no justice going on there. And it hurts. It hurts to feel that everybody is considered better than we are. Like, what, my kids don't deserve more than some Bedouin kids in the Negev, that they are able to bypass a Supreme Court lawing for Bedouins, or for releasing terrorists for Gilad Shalit, or for saving kibbutzim who are in, like, great debt. You know, there are so many examples of laws that were that went against the Supreme Court ruling, and here someone's like, oh, we can't go against the Supreme Court ruling. For God's sake, you're passing a law in the Knesset that is making, it's about this. It's this bill of Hasdara, of the regulation, is in order to make Judea and Samaria okay. And so what?
So if you can do that, you can do that.
Yeah, if you can do that, that's the whole point. These places are being demolished because they weren't okay, because Chok Hasdara, this regulation law, wasn't passed a few years ago. If it had been passed a few years ago, we wouldn't be in this predicament right now. And they were so close. They were so close to passing the law with Amona and Ofra and Nativa Avot. And I'm saying them together because there are also homes there that are to be demolished, though it is a little different because it's a neighborhood or it's a few houses inside a settlement. And here it's to erase a whole community, a whole settlement off the face of the land of Israel with the most right-winged government that we've had in years. And it's just wrong. It's just...
Yeah, the injustice of it, the double standards of it. But that's very much on a Supreme Court level, on a governmental level. Do you feel supported by the country? Do you feel supported by the people?
We've been really feeling like a hug from the people all the time. People have been coming all the time to ask what they can do to help, and coming to be here and bringing cakes and flowers and dinner and challahs. Just like nonstop, people knocking on the door and coming and just wanting to give a hug and give support. People are helping with money. We have a Head Start program, the project that we're raising money to help.
The link to the Head Start will be under this video. For those of you who want to support, click on the link below. Let me ask, your children, how are they handling it? Your children and the children in the community.
That's a good question. It's very, you know, it varies from child to child, different ages and different types, different families. It's hard. It's hard to have to look at your children in the eye and tell them, you know, somebody wants to destroy our house. Somebody doesn't want us to live here anymore. Like, why does a kid have to go through something like that? Why do kids have to be kicked out of their home and their community for no reason? Nothing is going to happen here. Nobody is going to come and be here. It's just, it's like, I feel like it's showing my kids, look, there's evil in the world. And, you know, I try to raise my kids and teach them that the world is a good place, that the world is full of love, that the world is a good place to be in, that we're here to make the world a better place. That's what I grew up learning and believing. And that's the way we live our life here. The life here is very connected to nature. There are a lot of people here who what they do is it has to do with agriculture. And I love that my kids can just run around outside in nature and be just connected to the land. And we have deer that run across the streets here. And it's just very pastoralic and there's a lot of freedom and trust, and people here trust each other. And
well, you said you have to tell them that there's evil in the world. But well, as the Jewish people, you know, we've been facing that for so long, for millennia. But what's so difficult about this is that it's our own nation. It's our own country.
Little kids are like, well, is it the Arabs coming to... Like, no, actually, it's not the Arabs. It's people from... It's very hard to explain that. Also, with the houses that were destroyed 11 years ago, every year, you know, we mention that and say, you know... You're like, well, who? And it's very hard for kids to understand that the soldiers from our side, who are supposed to be protecting us and are there with us, came here and destroyed. It's not like it's hard to explain that to kids.
The most painful part for me was the extreme violence, not on behalf of the Jewish residents of Amona or even the protesters. It was the police that were sent in, just cracking skulls of children that were sitting down and singing. Yeah. It was, I've never experienced a pain like that in my heart, including all of the Gaza disengagement, of seeing that. What is going to happen here?
Well, again, like you're saying, the violence did not start from our side in 2006, and the violence is not going to start from our side now. no person in his right mind will actually get up and just leave his home without resistance. We are going to resist leaving our home. We're not going to get up and walk out, and we're not going to leave easily, but we're not calling for violence of any kind. We have no intention to hurt anybody. We're calling out our cry of pain and anguish. And
for those who would ask why you're doing this, why do you want to live in a place like this that's so contested, where you know that there's a possibility that the Supreme Court is going to destroy your home? What is the motivation?
To begin with, for living here?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, most people who came here, the government encouraged people to come here 20 years ago and 15 years ago. The government put a lot of money down here for the electricity, for the infrastructures, for the roads, for the telephone lines. Like, everything here was based on governmental budgets. I don't know why we come live here. This is our home. This is where we chose to live our life. I could ask the same thing of somebody else. Why would you want to live in a 10-story building in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem or in Netanya? I don't want to raise my kids in a city on a... You know, everybody gets to choose where they want to build their life and where they want to live. This is where I choose to live my life, and I want to raise my kids here. This is, for me, this is the most beautiful place on the planet. Somebody else can come and say, oh, I'd never want to live here. But fine, that's your choice. When people come and say in the name of justice that they're making people get up and leave their homes against their will, it's wrong. There are so many ways to solve a problem like that. You can just, you know, in any other place in the world, people would just offer compensation. Tell the person, okay, there's a problem here, there's a claim here. People have been living here for 20 years. Just give the person compensation for their land and let, you know, go live somewhere else, get something else. They're not even gonna get this land. They're not getting money and they're not getting the land. The drive here is coming from hatred and evil, and that's what breaks me the most. Feeling that we're being evacuated in order to please people who all they want is hatred and destruction. After seeing last month Arabs who have burnt down homes for, you know, just starting fires and wanting to burn people and burning homes down, and now we're being evicted from our homes for no reason, just to give it to, I mean, it's not even going to be given to them. It's even more absurd than that.
It's not even going to be given to them. I'm going to turn over to Jeremy now, but just so you know, if it matters, from my perspective and many Jews in Israel and around the world, you're on the tip of the spear, and you're really taking a hit for the team, for the entire Jewish people. And the battle against the Jews in the world today is right here. This is the front lines of it. So
I want to say about that is that we also felt that, we felt the whole time we're not fighting just for Amona, we were fighting for all of Judea and Samaria.
And for all of Israel,
standing clear for and saying what we really believe in and not giving up and not giving in, saying, no, this is where we belong. This land is our land. This is our home, and this is where we want to be. We don't want to be moved. We're not chess pieces that you can just move them from one place to another. Oh, now we'll move them here for half a year, and then we'll move them there for... Come on, these are people. These are children. My children have a life. This is where they grew up. These are their friends. This is their community. This is where they live. This is a serious trauma to put 200 children through. I'm, you know, thinking I have 6 children here. It's very, very traumatic. Whether it's teenagers who are saying, wherever you live now, I'm not going to feel at home. I'm not going to be part of the community. I'm not going to want to come home. I'm not going to. What do I say to my teenage son who looks at me and I say, like, well, you're going to move to some other place. I don't know if I'll have friends there. I don't know what I'm not going to feel part of that place. And I'm like, oh my God. My teenagers won't feel at home anymore. And I have a 10-year-old who's full of fear and anxiety attacks and saying, well, but what about my friends? What about this? What about that? It's like they feel like their whole life is falling apart, and it's very hard to. So we're reassuring them, you know, we're going to be together no matter what happens. We're together and we're doing something that we believe in, and we know we're in God's hands, and God willing, you know, it'll work out and we'll be okay wherever we are. But it's very traumatic. We do believe in change, and we believe that it still can change, and that the government still has the ability to actually add the part in the law about retroactively saving Amona and the other places that are to be evicted. It can still be done. That change can still happen. And I believe that a true leader is someone who can admit to his mistakes and say, okay, we made a mistake, and we're putting this back in, and we're changing this, and stand for what we believe in and what we promised the people of Amona all along, over the past year, that we'd be with them until the end, and that and we'd fight with you, and suddenly we feel like suddenly they just, somebody gave up on us. We're like this soldier who was there for everybody, and then you just like got wounded, and oh, we'll just leave him here. And that's also a hard feeling that we were the head of the spear, as you said, and just suddenly being thrown
abandoned, neglected completely.
Friends, that was Manya Hillel inside her home in Amona. We're going to go out for a short break, and we're going to be right back after this. Thank you so much.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4-bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center with the most beautiful, breathtaking views. And I mean breathtaking. I've stayed there a number of times myself, and I'm telling you, there are few places anywhere in the city where you can take it all in to this degree. The view, the location, the great apartments, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.
Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
So, yeah, it's heartbreaking. Looking at those children was heart-wrenching. It was so difficult. And, you know, it's important for me on a personal level not to walk around carrying tremendous amounts of anger or hatred, particularly towards my fellow Jew. And something like this, it makes it very difficult because the callousness, the injustice of what the Supreme Court is doing, and those that are facilitating it, those that are allowing it to happen, it's really causing me to look deep within and make sense of it. I don't want to justify or vindicate the Supreme Court, but I don't want to hate them either. And, you know, the story I tell many, many times, I'm not going to go into the whole story, but we were doing a show about Shalom Achshav, Peace Now. And we asked them one question that I thought we would be able to get a real consensus about. And that was, do we need more Jewish unity? And who's going to say no to Jewish unity? It's fluffy. It's liberal. Unity is unity. Every single person said no. And why did they say no? Because unity has a connotation that those who are united together, there's something distinct, unifying about them that brings them together, that differentiates them from the rest of the world. And they don't want Jewish unity. It's not the Jews of Amona that they hate. It's not. It's the Jew within themselves, because that's why they're going after Judea. Judea, the land itself, is the Jewish heart, the Jewish soul, and the Jews there are the manifestation, the physical expression of the Jews who within them make them so uncomfortable. Because what do Jews want so much? It's wired into our consciousness, all of us. You and I have the same underlying desire that the Supreme Court has. But because of our knowledge of Torah and of God, it shows up and it manifests in the opposite way. But what does almost every Jew want? What Abraham wanted? Universalism. We want brotherhood of all of humanity. We're praying for the Messiah. The Messiah, when Messiah comes and the temple's built, there will be a house of prayer for all nations. We don't want to defeat our enemies. We want to be friends with our enemies. We want the world to come together. But these Supreme Court justices, the Israeli left, doesn't understand, and they think that what is preventing them from this universal brotherhood, it's this antiquated tribalistic religion that they have to hold on to. And if they just let that go, then the world will embrace them and the world will accept them, and they can be the 51st state in America or another country in the European Union. And that's what the real struggle is between the universalist and the particular. And that's why Abraham was so difficult, the circumcision, because now all of a sudden he's not just making souls all over the world. He's different. He's part of a distinct nation that has a certain function and a certain purpose. And even in this week's Torah portion, we see it, right? There's Jacob, and Jacob gets the blessing of the firstborn, and then he wrestles with Esau's angel or Esau's personality or Esau's essence, and then he becomes Israel. And Israel is both Jacob as an individual, Jacob who he was, plus the essence of Esau, both of those energies together in a harmonious unity. And that's really what I think we're going to see. While we think that we're opposites of the Supreme Court leftists, on some level we are, but on some levels, if we just were able to holistically merge together in a loving way, then it would be a complete whole. Then there would be a beautiful thing here, meaning we just have to try to keep our eye on the underlying. It doesn't mean we can't fight. We need to fight. And I'm actually interested, Jeremy, to know what your thoughts are about what we can do. I'm thinking we could block roads. We're going to put out content and make videos. But what can we actually do to stop this? That I don't know. But yeah, go ahead, please.
Well, I think to answer your question, what we can do to stop this, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there, Lynette, please God. I'm going to bring my big kids if I can. And I want to be a part of the resistance.
I'm going to be there too, but will that stop it? I'm actually saying to stop it.
You know, the country is so strong. What can 40 families and a bunch of protesters really do to stop the Israeli military?
I'm sure there is something. I just don't know what it is. But I have no doubt there's something. One per Abraham, look what he did to the whole world. What is that? We're playing a numbers game now?
Well, I don't know the answer. Maybe I'll have to pray about it. I'll have to think about it. Maybe an idea will come to me. But I definitely want this to be painful. I want it to be meaningful. I want to show that there's people in Israel that resist this. I want to make sure that the people of Amona are taken care of. I want to make sure that they're compensated. I know that there's a crowdfunding campaign right now that's being established to make sure that they are taken care of. I know that it's off the ground. We're going to put a link in this radio show on our website. You can click on it and support the people of Amona. There's no percentages are going anywhere. It's going directly to them, for them. That's a very important campaign to help fund because these are real families. They're not wealthy families. Some of them are shepherds. Some of them are blacksmiths. They're just simple people living in the land by their faith. And
you jump-started some kid's tractor that he's using, that he's been using for years to work the land and to grow his... And
they're just marvelous people. And, you know, we come to this week's Torah portion, and I always try, Ari and I, to figure out how do we make sense of the Torah portion in relation to what's going on in Israel, what's going on around the world. And it's in this week's Torah portion where we really receive our identity. We're not called the children of Jacob. We're called the children of Israel. We are defined as Israelites, not as Jacobites. And why is that? Jacob had two names, and he's really the only father that, even though he got a new name, the Torah sometimes reverses back and forth between his name and Israel. And his true identity is Israel, but yet sometimes he's called Jacob. And that's really an interesting thematic study to do. When does the Torah refer to him as Jacob? It's usually when he's a little bit weaker. When does the Torah refer to him as Israel? And just to go through that and see when the Torah does one, because he's the only one of the patriarchs. Abraham got a name change. Joshua got a name change. Sarah got a name change. But only Jacob's name was changed, but he sort of bounces back and forth between his two identities. And Jacob was given his name, Israel, after he struggled with the angel of Esau. And the angel says, now that you have struggled with me, says you have struggled with man and with God, and you have prevailed. Therefore, your name will be Israel. Because the name Israel has the word Sarita in it. It has the word, and you've struggled. So somehow the core identity of Israel is to struggle. And the angel says to struggle with man and with God. Then, you know, there's some religions where you just swallow a pill, you take a belief, you take a theology, and you're just, that's it, I'm done, there's no more struggle. The Jewish people, our entire identity is based on pursuing truth, on struggling with what the truth is, on continuously discovering new ideas, new interpretations, new understandings, struggling with why is this happening, what is the message for us? And I was thinking, why is that our identity? Why did God choose us to struggle? Why is the struggle so important to the essence of who we are? And obviously, if we're meant to be a model for the world, it's obviously this struggle is meant to be a model for the world. Because I think in Western society, the goal of life is to end the struggle. I mean, a man who's quote unquote made it, he would probably be sitting back with his feet up with a martini and a little like in a coconut with a little umbrella over it. And he's sort of sitting down and he's almost asleep, but not asleep. And he's really, really, really relaxed until he falls asleep. It's like the struggle is over.
That's a good point. Even in Buddhism, right? It's to end the suffering.
End the struggle.
End the suffering. No more suffering.
And we're saying, no, no, no.
Bring it on.
We are all about the struggle. And I'm like, well, Wonderland, I've been thinking and thinking and thinking. What is it about the struggle that is so important? And what's so awesome is that, you know, we have, Baruch Hashem, a lot of non-Jewish listeners. And they've joined the struggle. They're struggling with man, and they're struggling with God, and they're struggling with the Torah, and they're struggling with who they are and where they should go, and they've broken free from a lot of the constraints of their upbringings, and they've joined not necessarily the Jewish people as converts, but they've joined the Jewish mission of being a part of this struggle. And what is it about the struggle that's so fundamental? And I'm sure there's a lot of dimensions of truth to this, but I'm just going to share one that came to me yesterday. And I was thinking, well, what do we really have at the end of our lives? Who are we really? I believe, at least this is the way that I'm trying to raise my children, and I try to be this myself in my own, you know, slowly growing way, but it's the character and integrity that we have as people. That's all that we really got. And if that's true, that it's our character and our integrity and the truth that we have is our truth and how far we take that truth and how we live by that. So if I were to say the definition of character or integrity is what is the degree to which we live our lives consistent with the values that we hold true. And to adhere to what you believe to be right and to do what you've committed to do even after the mood in which you've committed has passed. If you've committed to live by the Torah and you've said, that's it. I'm eating kosher, whatever that means. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, but there's a McDonald's right here and that cheeseburger looks really good. And you're like, but I know that that cow wasn't slaughtered in the right way. And this, the meat and the milk and whatever that means, but oh gosh, but I want it right now. Your character and your integrity is, are you going to live up to what you have committed to, even if you're not in the mood to do so? Even if you don't want to do so. And I was thinking, wow, the entire Torah is also a blueprint for building our character. Why? Because you only discover what you're made of and where you're holding in life under circumstances of nisayon, under the circumstances of a test. That's why Abraham is constantly tested over and over and over again. So Abraham knows. So that God knows, so that the whole world knows.
No, God already knows, but so Abraham himself is able to see.
I don't know.
You don't think that God already knows Abraham's capacity and potential?
It will enter into a theological debate that there are verses, the Arizal says, in the place of choice, there is no knowledge, and in the place of knowledge, there is no choice. So in that moment of choice, perhaps God is actually waiting to see what is Abraham going to do. And in that place of absolute free will, maybe there's a place where Abraham's actually showing God his real stuff. Maybe God already knows it, but there's something about only when we are under a test, only when there is a struggle, is our true identity revealed? How much do we love this land? If I'm sitting in an armchair and I'm enjoying life, sipping my martini, yeah, I may say that I love this land, but the question is when the chips are down and homes are going to be destroyed, am I going to give of my money to help them? Am I going to give of my days to help them? Am I going to give of myself to show
my
how
consciousness,
much
our minds,
I love
where our heart is.
This thing? So I say that this is now an opportunity for everyone around the world to actually say, this is how much I love the land of Israel. I'm not going to let Amona happen and I just sit on the sidelines and flip the page to the next page in the next news article. I want to show my support. I want to pray for them. I want to think about them. I want to support them. I want to be there on the day that they need me most. And this is our opportunity to join the struggle, because to be a part of the struggle is to be a part of Israel.
That's right. And Jeremy, we just brought a group from Germany to the headquarters the other day. And, you know, there's this Michel, who is he? Is he French?
French
guy. And he was saying to me, he said, you know, after what the French did to my whole family, murdering most of my family, I cannot stand Germans. But he's like, these two groups you've brought of Germans and you connecting with them, getting to know them, the most wonderful people ever. And it's like they're the entire essence of trauma and persecution has been liberated because of the times that we're in. The people who are part of this struggle and joining the Jewish struggle, there is a new nation, a new essence forming. And you know, unless Jeremy, you have something you want to say, I just wanted to cut to the second interview that we did today, the interview with Anita Tucker. She was in Gaza. She really is. Talk about a woman made of like the metal that she's made of. She's such a hero. And she had some interesting and very critical insights into what's happening with Amona right now. So I want you to hear that. Okay, so we are here now with Anita Tucker, a name that many of our listeners are familiar with. She is one of the most articulate spokesmen for the quote-unquote settler movement. She was in Gush Katif. I'm not going to tell your story, Anita. I'd rather you give a little bit of background about yourself to our listeners out there who aren't familiar.
In 1976, I wanted to move to a farming village. We'd come to live in Israel from the States. I'm from New York, my husband from Cleveland. And we came to the sand dunes of Gush Katif. And over 30 years that I was a farmer in Gush Katif, we developed it into a beautiful place.
Now, let me just interject here. For those that are not familiar with the terminology, Gush Katif is the same as Gaza. It was the Jewish community in Gaza that was forcefully disengaged from, people say, but it was really just an ethnic cleansing of Jews from this land. I was there. I was carried out. I know you were the head of Netzer Chazani, the oldest community there.
Right. So we were the first nine families that came there. Our children were born there, grandchildren were born there, and we had really hoped that our great-grandchildren would be born here. And that's why I can't understand at all what's happening here in Amona. How could anyone do again to another human being what was done to us in the land of Israel? It's just impossible to believe. My heart is bleeding. My heart is crying. For the people here, beyond the land of Israel that I care about, and beyond the injustice, there's no logical reason for that this is being done. There are families with 200 children, 41 families that live here, 200 children that are going to be uprooted. And we know so well how much trauma that involves. And this is their home. You're going to take them out, give them another home? Where's the rock that they sat on with their girlfriend? Where is the places where they walked and played as children? This is their home, and we cannot uproot them from their home for absolutely no logical reason.
Yeah, 2,000 years we've been uprooted from home after home after home, but that's the nature of the diaspora, of the exile. It shouldn't be happening here in the land of Israel. And you started by asking the question, how? What is your answer? How is the government doing this? How? Why? What sense do you make of it?
I can't make any sense whatsoever. I think that they're just scared of the high courts, and there's nothing to be scared of. They're scared of Judaism. They're scared of Zion. There are a lot of things that are scaring different people, but logic and humanity and justice says we have to stay here. Who is claiming that this is their land? No one. There's no one that claimed that this is their land. There's just someone that said a little lot here, brought a piece of paper that maybe a little lot of two and a half acres is his land. And for that, we're going to uproot 200 acres of land that people have been living on for 20 years and have built up businesses and everything. I mean, this is totally wild. Nowhere in the world would it work. And even if there were people that claimed the land, you know, my parents had a home in Germany. And after they decided to give compensation to the families who were thrown out of Germany in World War II, they went to ask to get their home back. And they said, are you crazy? The Germans living in your house have been living there for over 20 years. We're going to throw them out of their house. And they threw them a few cents to give them as compensation for the land that they own. So even if there was such a person that could prove in court legitimately that he owned the land here, so give him compensation. You don't throw people out of their homes after 20 years if a mistake was made. This is crazy.
Right. And these people that are even claiming that the land was theirs, they didn't come up with this. No. They were sought after proactively by this foreign-funded NGO, Yesh Din. Its purpose is to
destroy Israel. Their
destroy
purpose
Israel.
Is to destroy Israel. And there's no doubt about it that they are influencing who is getting into the courts, the judges. They're influencing who is getting to the civil administration in the IDF through pressure, through money, through PR companies, through legal tricks. And the truth is the truth, and anyone who believes in the truth and sees the truth has to be here whenever this is going to happen, close to Hanukkah, close to the holiday of the martyrdom of the Jews. And I think we expect to see many, many people, right, left, anyone who cares about justice and humanity is going to be over here. I don't think it's an issue of right or left. It's not an issue of land grabbing. It's an issue of justice and of humanity.
Justice and humanity. You know, Let's take a step back, Anita. Go back to Gush Katif, the disengagement, as it was called. I was picked up and carried out. It was a very traumatic and painful experience. But at the same time, there wasn't a widespread, prevalent violence throughout the disengagement. There was, however, 11 years ago during Amona. Why do you think there was violence then and there wasn't in Gaza?
The violence that was in Amona was obviously and clearly initiated by the government that allowed the policemen to, or encouraged them even, to act violently. Ordered them to act violently. There was no logic in it. It had nothing to do with, it was just to prove you can't do this again. We're in charge here and whatever it is. Or people that don't like Judaism and Zionism and want this, as you said before, it's still true.
What do you anticipate will happen here?
I think there's going to be so many people coming down here that the government's going to get scared out, because it's not a very politically smart thing to do for a right-wing government to have to get into a physical fight with their own people, with their own voters. So I hope that there'll be enough sense there to that this right-wing government is going to have the sense not to get into any kind of a...
So you think just because of a lot of people showing up?
A lot of people showing
they're
up.
They're going to not absolutely. Go through with
I think
the...
a lot of people showing up is going to stop them
Gaza?
From violence. Without violence, they can't. Without violence, they can't do it. There weren't enough people. They didn't come in. There weren't enough people coming in to protect 10,000 people that were living in Gush Katif, in Gaza, Jews that were living in Gaza. We should have had hundreds of thousands of moral people, because it's an issue of morality. Really, it is.
There would have been more in Gaza, though. There would have been more, but they shut off the roads. They'll just do that here, of course, no?
That's right. So if enough people try to get here, then that's the only answer. Really, it's the only answer, unless we can convince the public that you have to have a mass protest. If something is illegal and unjust, then the only answer is the masses that understand this injustice and are not willing. This is the red line. Everybody's going to have red lines in their life. In their lives, everybody's going to have red lines. So I think every person, the least activist person, now is the time to stand up. And even if you live in abroad and you live in other countries, you can write in, you can speak to the government, you can do all that you can to try to make sure that justice is done in this case and not leave land empty. By the way, another issue is a security issue. This whole last week, there have been so many terrorists, known terrorists, proven terrorists that have been arrested from the towns not far from here, nearby. So they want to give the land over to terrorists? Are we crazy? Are we out of our mind? No logical country anywhere in the world would ever allow such a thing to happen.
Right. And to me, they're making this a pragmatic deal. They're saying we're going to pass these laws that will not happen again, but it's going to happen now in Amona. To me, Amona is not a battle and a war. It is the war. And the minute you give away the land of Israel and say it does not belong to the Jewish people, even one little bit of it, you lose the credibility and the legitimacy for all of it. And this is the front line for the legitimacy and the credibility of the land of Israel.
Right. And absolutely, it's true, because what happened in Gush Katif in Gaza is exactly what's happening now. And that allowed this to happen today. So we can't allow another Gaza to fall, another Gaza to be destroyed. It makes absolutely no sense. This is part of the land of Israel around over here, where most of the Bible stories, the prophecies, all in this whole area. And this is just too crazy to believe. And I think really every single person who's moral, who cares about the land of Israel, it's the time to speak up. And we should know that there really is no solution where these people are going to move. There is. Everything that we've been reading in the media is false. It's not accurate. It's just something temporary for a few months. Nobody's going to look at them the next day. So we've got to be here because we care about every single person. I know what it was like to be thrown out of your home. I know what it was like to wait for 11 years until any kind of thing happened, until you were able to get any land to try to build again. I know what it did to our children, to our families. It can't be done again.
The sociological, emotional toll that it took. There was depression. Children were having real difficulties, and we're just doing that to ourselves again, literally for no reason. I feel like there could be truly a case study done on Jewish pathology of the left, just to understand it. I mean, they're not bad people, but there's clearly something deeply wrong there. Anyways, but what is deeply right? Anita Tucker. Thank you so much for all that you're doing for Israel. So you've heard from Jeremy, from myself, from Manya Hillel, from Anita Tucker, and hopefully we've given you a little taste, a little touch of what is happening in the land of Israel on the tip of the spear of the battle against liberty, against the against God in the world. This is what we're dealing with. And, you know, you said at the end of today, there was a fellow we brought with us out there, and you said something so interesting in the car. You could have been like, oh, how devastating, how sad. And you said to him, well, isn't life in Israel just so meaningful? And that's true. With all of the pain and all of the ups and the downs and the injustices, at least we're alive. You know, at least we're feeling the meaning and the purpose and the mission, and we're part of something great. And it's not just us. It's anyone who decides to connect to this mission. And by listening to the Land of Israel Network, that's exactly what you're doing. So thank you so much, all of you, for listening to us. You got Ari@thelandofisrael.com. You can email me. Not great at answering them, but give me some time. Jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. And if you want to help Amona, there's a link down below. Shalom from Jerusalem.
Hey folks, this is Jeremy Gimpel. I want you to know, if you're a non-Jew from a Christian background or just a full-fledged Christian and you want to come to Israel, the best program, tour, experience that you could possibly have is to go with Hayovel. Now, it's weird. I'm an Orthodox Jewish rabbi, and I'm telling Christians to go to this Christian ministry in the middle of Samaria. Let me tell you, there is no better experience for someone outside of the land, outside of the Jewish fold, to come into the land and work alongside the Jewish farmers of Samaria, to learn about the culture, to meet the people. It's an experience like no other, and I think it's also probably the cheapest way to travel to Israel. So go to Hayovel.com.
Hi, this is Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. You can hear a new show from me every Sunday, and every day of the week, shows from another one of my very talented fellow show hosts. Reach me, Eve@thelandofisrael.com. And keep listening, everybody. We love your feedback. The Land of Israel, coming at you every day, every week. That's the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com.